Welcome to the Wealth Under Pressure podcast. Financial success very often has less to do with owning a financial product, earning a high income, or even being frugal. Instead, the path to success comes from having a comprehensive plan that enables you to optimize decisions and avoid mistakes. Join John Smallwood, a certified financial planner, as he identifies key areas of pressure on people's wealth and strategizes to reduce it. It's time to liberate your wealth.
Hello and welcome to the Wealth Under Pressure podcast with John Smallwood of Smallwood Wealth Management. Good afternoon, John. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Doing real well. Just as a reminder for our audience, last time on your last podcast, you talked about term insurance mainly. That was kind of the focus. And today we're going to be talking about whole life insurance. Is that right?
That is correct. And this is a continuation of, this is actually part three of a series.
That's right.
In the process where we were talking about life insurance and the role of it during your entire lifetime and how it, you know, from the accumulation phase to retirement phase to, in essence, the pass it along phase, however we want to frame that. And I think what I wanted to kind of rediscuss and refocus on is when we were talking about term insurance and we were talking about life insurance, you know, having life insurance in your plan is one of the most important parts of a plan. It doesn't really matter the type of insurance as long as the insurance is here upon your demise, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not a one and done kind of thing. It's not you buy one policy and that's it for the rest of your life. And that's kind of what you're covering.
Correct. Correct. And that's something that I think there's, when you start thinking about all the blogs and everything that you're reading and you're seeing, it's kind of like the argument that this life insurance policy is better than that life insurance policy. And, you know, that's circumstantial and it depends upon timing and conditions and, you know, a whole series of factors that as soon as we move from the timeline, let's say we're 35 and we go out to 50 and we go out to from 50 to 60, from 60 to 80, 80 to 100, your life and everything about your life is constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
And life insurance plays a role in all of those parts. And when we talk about term insurance, the takeaway on the term insurance was you need to max out the coverage. You need to have maximum coverage for your situation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Based upon your income, based upon your debts, your liabilities, your future obligations, colleges and mortgages, and you know the pressures that you have, and also all those positive things. What you can't quantify when you're doing maximum coverage is, you know, lightning bolts in the future that basically, you know, you go from working for somebody to owning your own business and you're making $100,000 to making $1 million. 5 years in advance of that, you're probably not aware that that's going to happen. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So this is an ever changing and ever evolving concept. But one of the foundational concepts is that in your most, one of your most valuable assets is your ability to get up every day and go to work. Okay. So the life insurance ensures that asset. It protects that asset. The life, you know, term insurance, what we walked away with last time, is in essence, it's a rental. You're renting the insurance for a specific time frame. The policies are continual for, you know, all the way out to 100, but the premium levels, as we talked about, will change over time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And whole life insurance is really the exact opposite of that. And it's really, it's a policy that you own for your entire lifetime. And it has a lot of unique features. But before we dig into those features, I really want to talk about what it does, okay?
Okay.
And I think this is a big misnomer in the industry. You know, there's a lot of arguments by term, invested difference, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't want to address that today in this podcast, but I want to talk about when a whole life insurance policy is implemented into a client's plan, about 12 things start happening. You know, initially, you're putting money into a policy that has extremely, it's a very safe, it has very good ratings. The companies that write whole life insurance are your bigger, more secure mutual companies. Matter of fact, when you look at the balance sheets of some of the publicly traded companies, there's different types of assets out there, tier one, tier two, tier three. The life and corporate owned life insurance is one of those tier one high secure assets. So it's a very safe contract and a very safe investment of capital as you're moving forward. As you put money into a whole life policy, it begins to build a cash value that has a very competitive rate of return compared to other financial products. What most people don't understand is that the return is a contractual return as opposed to a market return, okay? And when I say that, there are, when you look at a whole life insurance policy, there's a guaranteed cash value every single year that the contract is in force. And then there are dividends which are not guaranteed, but they're based on the success of the company, which we'll discuss later, which those dividends could enhance that cash value. And the combination of those two together give you a very competitive rate of return. The asset grows on a tax-deferred basis, so there's no tax during the accumulation phase. The policy cash values in potentially portions of the death benefit, depending on the state that you live in, are creditor proof. When somebody gets to a point where there's $100,000 of, say, let's say cash value, and they have $100,000 in the bank and they have some sort of creditor issue, somebody's suing them, the $100,000 in the bank is not protected from creditors. Mm-hmm. The $100,000 in a life insurance policy, depending on the state that you live in, could be protected from creditors. That's it. You know, it's a very unique feature that, you know, most people don't really understand the value of that until they're getting sued.
Well, and that's, John, yeah, absolutely. And John, that brings up one of the main problems. You spoke earlier and you said a whole life policy as part of a client's plan. And each client is going to have a different plan based on their needs. And there's so much information out there, or there's a lot of voices out there saying, oh, don't buy whole life insurance. It's not worth it. And people just don't understand all the pieces of it and the different types out there. So I know that you're going to be covering that, but that's something that each individual needs to speak to their trusted advisor about themselves to find out how it can fit in. So what's next on your list?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And it's, what's interesting is when you look at the policy as it's growing its cash value and it's doing things, it has unique tax treatment. It has what's called FIFO accounting, first in, first out, mm-hmm. which basically is not a lot of financial products out there have that. Most products are last in, first out, which is LIFO accounting, which means like if I take money out of an annuity, it's all automatically taxable. And with FIFO accounting is if in that same example, if I have $100,000 in life insurance cash value with $80,000 of basis, let's say premiums paid, mm-hmm. I could actually pull the $80,000 out of the contract through a withdrawal or a surrender tax-free and leave my gain in the contract and not pay any tax. Oh, so wow. The FIFO accounting aspect is extremely unique feature that doesn't exist in many other financial products that are out there.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's fantastic.
You also have access to the money along the way. So you're getting this tax-deferred growth, but you have access to it along the way. You know, you're 35 years old and you start this, you have access to the cash values along the way, where a lot of other financial products have a 10% penalty if you access them prior to 59 and a half, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then the policy begins to pay dividends, which we'll talk about where they come from, but dividends are basically as a policy owner of a whole life insurance company, you own a portion of the company, and a portion of those profits of the company are returned in the form of a dividend. And you have options with those. You can reinvest those back into the policy. You can put them at interest. You can get them back. You can use them to reduce your premium. There's a myriad of options that are unique that each person buying a policy is going to do that. So these dividends are happening. When I retire, I can benefit from tax advantage income, so I can generate almost tax-free income in retirement. Dividends from a policy in retirement are tax-free until I reach my basis, meaning premiums paid.
Gotcha.
And policy loans are considered to be tax-free. Along the way, you can also access your money through low-cost policy loans. Most of them range between somewhere between 0.5% and 2% net cost loans, which we'll explain at a future date. But there's very low cost access to your money, which has great advantages to that. If you become disabled, policies have something called a waiver of premium. So if you're putting $10,000 a year into savings plan A versus putting it into a whole life insurance policy and you become disabled, savings plan A stops, the life insurance company will continue to pay the $10,000 a year for you under the waiver of premium disability benefit. Each company's got a unique one. Yeah. It's different. There are different conditions, but it's completing if you're disabled. All the not all the policies, but a majority of the policies being issued today have an accelerated benefit rider that says, okay, you are terminally ill or you are chronically ill. You can access your cash value and a large portion of your death benefit, depending on the company, they differ. But in essence, you can get that money prior to death. And there's no, when you think about long-term care, it's a reimbursement type strategy. I have to spend $10,000 to get $10,000 from a long-term care policy. Well, if you're terminally ill, you can say, I'd like to take $50,000 out of the policy of the death benefit or the cash value and use it for taking my family around the world.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow.
So there's not a reimbursement structure. And then ultimately there's a death benefit, right? Which, so when you think about this, if the visualization is this, like most financial products, you put a dollar into it, you get one or two benefits. You're getting, you know, some interest and maybe some tax deferred growth. When you think about a life insurance contract, you're getting a significant, you know, you're getting great asset protection from the creditor proofing and the safety and the security. You're getting a competitive rate of return that you're not paying taxes on. Your death benefit's growing. So when you start to think about life insurance in the plan, whole life insurance in the plan, what it's typically doing is it's reducing the taxes that are in your plan during accumulation. It's reducing the taxes in retirement. It's reducing your risk because of the security of these life insurance companies. It's reducing fees, is helping increase income, and the death benefit as a whole life insurance policy. We talk about, you know, term was the rental. Whole life insurance policies, the ones that are being issued today, are going out beyond age 100. The old policies would go to, you know, age 98 or, you know, or earlier dates, but now most of the policies are staying in force to age 100. Or more.
Yeah, I mean, as part of an overall plan, they sound incredibly flexible, is what it sounds like to me, with all these different options. And, you know, because again, we get a policy, no matter what it is, maybe at 40, we don't know what's going to happen in the next 30 years. So having that flexibility is huge.
And that's a really key factor there, because there's a perception that the policies are not flexible. And what's really interesting is, through the loan provisions and the dividends and, you know, the surrender options, once you get beyond year three in a contract, you have such flexibility as far as how you pay premiums, how long you pay premiums. You can take time off. I mean, there's a myriad of things that you can do. You can, you know, you could use the money for your kids' college. You can, there's ultimate uses of what you're trying to use that money for, but the flexibility is really the key on how a life insurance policy, a whole life insurance policy, is extremely flexible because of the guarantees. And what's interesting is when you say, well, guarantees, if you think about it, in a whole life contract, you have three core guarantees. You have a premium that's guaranteed not to change for a specific time frame. And when we talk about policies, in a whole life environment, you could have a single pay policy, one-time premium. There are companies that will do 2, 3, 4, 5 pays, 10 pays, meaning pay 10 premiums and then no more thereafter, guaranteed. 20 pays, paid up at 65, paid up at 75, paid up at 98, paid up at 100, paid up at 120. You can design the contract the way you want to, but let's say you took out a whole life 100. Well, that premium is guaranteed to be the same from day one to year, you know, whatever age you are, you know, whatever year that is when you turn 100. For me, I'm 50. So it would be 50 years where the premium is guaranteed not to change.
Wow.
With that, there's a guaranteed cash value that contractually the insurance company has to pay you, has to provide that guaranteed cash value. And that starts in some contracts that might start in year one, some contracts that might start in year two. But over time, those guarantees will exceed the premiums that are being paid depending upon the length of premium that you're paying and this death benefit that you're getting. The third part is that I have a guaranteed death benefit. So for the premium, I get a guaranteed death benefit, but I also get a guaranteed cash value. So that from a contractual standpoint, the insurance company has to keep the premium the same. They have to give you the guarantees of the cash values, and that death benefit is always there, meaning it's guaranteed and it cannot be changed. You, as a contract holder, have tremendous flexibility. You can modify those guarantees by changing your policy, but they can't. So I don't think people really get the guarantees because most financial products don't have that type of a guarantee structure. Okay?
Yep.
And I think when you think about a life insurance company and how does it make money, it has to do with actuarial science or mortality credits. It really has nothing to do with stock markets or bond markets or economic environments. Life insurance companies, true life insurance companies, make money from mortality science. When you think about it, there are four components to the success of a life insurance company. They keep a tremendous amount of reserves, and they have the majority of those reserves are in high quality bonds. They might have some high quality mortgages to very large, you know, secure buildings. They might own some real estate, but a very small amount of money is in other, they might own some businesses and they might own some other areas, but the majority of that money is in very safe and secure assets. Over time, the return on those assets are going to fluctuate. In 1990, if you had a bond portfolio, the rates were very high. In 2000, the rates were lower. In 2018, the rates are even lower as far as your bond, you know, as far as what those bonds are actually yielding. Mm-hmm. But that's not the, you know, that's their, that money's there to pay claims. The higher the interest rates, the better the companies are going to do because it just makes sense, right?
Right.
So, but the real success comes in from what we call the mortality and the lapse and the expense ratio. So as a life insurance company, they get to, before you get to have a contract, they get to do a medical exam on you. You get to pee in a cup. You get to take some blood.
Hey, that's right? A good time, so right?
They kind of know, you know, is this person a healthy person or not, right? And that's why I'm saying getting maximum insurance, meaning maximum term insurance, is an important thing because once you have that term insurance and that policy is convertible, you can convert to a whole life contract at any time without going through the exam process again.
And that can be years later, right? I mean, and obviously, you know, usually most people are healthier when they're younger. And so that's why it's so important to start early.
Start young, start early. Yep. And it's like saving, start early, start young. But that mortality is the insurance company. If we're going to insure 1,000 people, we expect a certain amount of money, a certain amount of people each year actuarially to die. The trend has been people are living longer, so less people are dying. Mm-hmm. So the longer people live, the more profitable the insurance company becomes because we were expecting to pay out 10 claims for this year out of the 1,000 people we insured, and we pay out 8. We're really successful.
Yeah, bonus for them.
Bonus for them. And that's been the – you know, as interest rates have been falling over the last 28 years of my career, the people have been living longer. So the combination of those two things together, the dividends, why they've fallen, they've not fallen like interest rates on CDs and other related products. So it's been really interesting. The other thing that's really important is, I think we talked about it last time, is the lapse ratio. And lapse ratio, out of all the policies that we write, let's say that same 1,000 policies that we're talking about, we expect from an actuarial standpoint, a certain percentage of those are not going to be on the books in 10 years, meaning the client will have dropped the coverage, will have left, not death. This is, I don't need my life insurance anymore. And a lot of the strategies that are being promoted out there is you don't need life insurance in the future when you're old, when you're close to death, because you don't need it. Why? Because we don't want to pay the death claims.
Yeah. Yeah.
right? But that lapse ratio seems to be, from an actuarial standpoint, through all different types of economic environments, that lapse ratio is consistent. And as even though we have more education and more access to information, that lapse ratio actually it continues to be a very strong thing. So how well does the portfolio do? How well do we do with our mortality selection? How well do we do with our lapse ratio? And then the insurance companies are basically talking about what are the expenses to run the company. And what you're seeing is, with the technology, to get a policy underwritten, a lot of the major carriers over the last 4 to 5 years have been able to dramatically reduce their time and their costs to underwrite a policy. Those all fall to the bottom line. Now, in a whole life insurance environment, you have a mutual company and you have a stock company, okay? Most of the stock companies write a product called Universal Life, which is different. We're going to talk about that on the next podcast, okay?
All right.
But the whole life insurance or a participating policy, meaning as a whole life insurance owner of a policy, I own a portion of that mutual company. And those profits from that company are returned to me in the form of a dividend, which I get to choose how I want to use it. Okay. So when I, earlier I was telling you that you got the guaranteed cash value, you got the guaranteed premium, you got the guaranteed death benefit.
Yep.
Well, what happens is a year goes by and the company has, an experience, meaning the markets have done what they've done, mortality has done what it's done, lapse ratio has done what it's done. And based upon your policy and how long you've owned it, you're going to share in a portion of those profits in the form of a dividend. With the dividend, I can take that dividend and reinvest it back into the contract. It's typically called the paid-up additions rider. When I do that, that dividend builds my cash value. It buys a little bit more death benefit, but it also now becomes part of my guaranteed cash values.
Hmm. Okay.
Most people don't know that. Okay. So, or I could say, use that dividend to reduce my premium or send me the dividend in cash. Or at certain points, there's the option to put the dividend at interest, which means short-term rates are better than long-term rates, right? The short-term at interest, the insurance company may pay a higher interest, but that would make the interest on that taxable at that point because it's taxable. Okay, and some companies even have a indexed option where you could put it in some sort of index depending on the carrier that you're using. There's all different areas. So that dividend, every single year that I take a dividend and I reinvest that dividend back into my contract and I buy what's called paid up additions, over time, my death benefit is increasing, my cash values are increasing above the guarantees, and every time I reinvest those dividends back into the contract, that now increases the guaranteed contract. So when you look at those long ledgers, and I think everybody's seen them out there, you look at, maybe 20 years out and there's a guaranteed cash value. Well, if I reinvested a whole bunch of dividends into the contract and now I'm looking at it in force illustration 10 years after the policy came out, the guarantees are completely different. Mm-hmm. But the guarantee, here's something that I think everybody has to think about also, right? The guarantee assumes that the insurance company never pays a dividend. Most of the big insurance companies have not missed one. They've started in the 1800s, they've gone through the Depression, they've gone through all different phases. They've paid more and they've paid less than they've expected, but they've never missed a dividend payment.
Gotcha.
That's a really powerful thing. Now, yeah. I think what's really interesting also is when we compare investments and we compare investment strategies, what we're thinking about is we're always looking at past performance, okay? How well did this XYZ do for me? If I put money in that, how would it have done? The S&P 500 as an example, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're looking at a life insurance illustration, by law, what they're doing is they're saying we're not gonna take our past performance that benefited from 30 years of falling interest rates, but we're going to take our current experience, what we're currently earning, what the current dividend scale is, and we're going to extrapolate that out into the future. And the policy, this projection assumes that nothing ever changes.
Yeah.
It's not using our past, it's not using the past performance. Okay. So what I like to talk about is when I started in 1989 in the industry, the dividend rates were in the 9% range. Now they're in the 5 to 6% range. If interest rates rise, that means the portfolio rate's going to get higher. So interest rates, the dividend rate will rise. If mortality continues to get better, the dividend's going to rise. If lapse ratio continues to be successful, I say that with tongue in cheek,
yeah,
we're going to be successful. And if expenses continue to be, you know, kept in check and reduced, the insurance companies are in a position where, you know, these things, these illustrations could potentially, maybe, look a lot better than what the current projections are basically going through. But my position is, you know, it's like anything, you're looking at this, and the power of life insurance is that you and I are both going to die, right?
Yep. Unfortunately, sometime.
Everybody listening to the podcast is going to die.
Yep.
We don't know the time. We don't know the date. We don't know the location. And we don't know the economic circumstances.
Correct.
And we really don't know what our life is going to be like at that moment of death. Okay. My father would always say dying is bad enough, but dying in a down market really stinks.
Yeah.
All right. Now, life insurance is in essence a guaranteed quantity that you know is going to come in. Right. So when you start thinking about, and I've done some compound interest where we talk about compound taxation, we talk about market volatility. We've done a bunch of podcasts where we've talked about all these things, right? When you take an investment along with life insurance, you put the two together, whole life insurance, the two together will work better than one by itself. And that's the, in investing and wealth management, you have multiple things that you need to accomplish, multiple tasks, multiple duties. You have to put your kids through college. You have to retire. You have to take care of the now. You have to go enjoy things, right? You have to save for a rainy day. You have to save for a sunny day. You have to save for opportunities. You have to go through up markets and down markets. You got to, you know, maybe lose your job, maybe lose your business. You need, and all those benefits that we were talking about are going to play different roles at different times in your plan. But the key is, when you marry the two things together, a investment portfolio with a life insurance policy, a whole life insurance policy, the two together are going to work better than one by itself because it's going to reduce taxes, it's going to reduce fees, it's going to reduce costs, it's going to reduce risk. There's a series of things that happen, and the whole idea is that when I look at the future, is putting the strategy going to create more wealth or create less wealth?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the economics, and you got to look at all the variables. And what most people do is they look at it and they say, well, if I put, you know, 10 grand a year into the S&P, I'd have all this money. They're not factoring in taxation. They're not factoring in market volatility. They're not they're not factoring in fees and costs. And they're not factoring in term costs, et cetera, which I think we should do at a future podcast where we actually maybe do like a screen share and we show it and, you know, put a video up or something. But I think it would be much more powerful. But the key is that when you put all the variables in and you account for them all, you're going to find that you're going to get the whole goal is to get to the same spot but have less risk, less taxes, less fees, less costs, more benefits and more protection. And the death benefit in retirement, having a permanent death benefit in retirement is probably one of the most important things that I can see in anybody's retirement plan. You know, we're dealing with clients in all different phases, and, you know, there's pension options, there's joint survivor options, they lose a Social Security, they might burn up money in a long-term care facility prior to death. Might be a down market, as my father likes to say.
Yeah.
You know, it's all these variables, and the idea is that, as closing argument here or closing conversation, is that whole life insurance offers a suite of economic benefits that I don't think you could create the product today if it didn't exist. Gotcha. If you went to Congress and said, we want to have all these benefits and all these features, I really don't think you could get it through. And I think the education is a very poor education in our financial services industry, that it's there's a lot of misinformation out there. So what I urge people to do is to sit with a qualified advisor that understands, you know, all the different parameters and show and understand how a policy works in one's life and how it could work through, you know, where you are now through the next 10 years, 15, 20, 30, 40 years, and how it works in retirement and how it can increase your retirement income and pass more to your family. Those are the things that you need to be doing.
Yeah.
And now, and you need to do it now because, when you think about it, I have all the time in the world to build my savings and my growth component of my plan up, right? But if I become disabled or I die or I get sued, if my protection part of my plan is not maximum today and tomorrow and later today I have a problem, there's no way I can't buy it all tomorrow.
Yeah, you can't go back.
You can't go back. You have no opportunity. We're investing. You can go back and say, oh, I made a bad decision. Let me go, you know, I spent money on my credit card. Tomorrow I'm going to save money. Well, that you can go forward with protection, you can't.
Yeah. Well, John, this has been just a ton of great information. I know you probably have more to cover, but that's going to be another podcast, man, because this has been a tremendous amount and it's been fantastic. And I know that you kind of wrapped up. Is there anything else that you wanted to add before we close this down?
No, I think the only thing that I want people to understand is that it's a conversation.
Absolutely.
Meaning what's right for you is not necessarily right for your neighbor and vice versa. Okay. And we have on our website, you go to smallwoodassociates.com, you schedule a meeting, there's a button there, and you sign up for what we call a wealth curve conversation, which is a conversation about you to understand where your pressure is and to understand where your assets are and really understand what are the things that you should be doing in your plan. And that conversation is free. There's no obligation. You could also request a copy of our book, Five Ways Your Wealth is Under Attack, which talks about the taxes and the erosion factors that are out there, that it's a really interesting strategy. So we're offering that to everybody. It's available. Take advantage of it.
And I really stress this. If you're listening to this, you need to contact John because he doesn't make blanket statements. If you really truly heard what he said in this podcast, there's so much individualized treatment or plans for each person, depending on where you're at in life, where you want to go, where you want to be, what your health is. That's a discussion you have to have one-on-one. The radio that you're hearing, the websites that you see that tell you one way or another, they don't know you personally. So his team does that. Like he said, it's free. Please, by all means, reach out. More importantly, thank you so much for even listening to today's podcast with John Smallwood. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when John comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. And this makes it even easier to share with your friends and family, which again, I highly encourage you to do because you know somebody who needs to have this conversation. Thank you so much for listening. For everyone at Smallwood Wealth Management, this is Eric Johnson reminding you to live your best day every day. We'll see you next time.
Smallwood Wealth Management is a registered investment advisor. The opinions expressed by Smallwood Wealth Management and guests on this show are their own. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only. Moreover, no listener should assume that any discussions or information presented serves as the receipt of or a substitute for personalized advice from Smallwood Wealth Management or from any other investment professional and is not intended as an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Smallwood Wealth Management is not a law firm or accounting firm, and no portion of this presentation should be interpreted as legal, accounting, or tax advice. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any individual. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation.